The other three ships of the fleet, Nightcaller, Constrictor, and Provocateur, arrived from hyperspace within a second of one another. Instantly, all three vessels launched their TIE fighters. Implacable failed to appear behind them. Captain Rackness's voice came across the ship's intercom.
Attention, all crew. Implacable has figured out the trap and held back. The other ships are turning to escape Talisea's mass shadow. We'll fire on them as we maneuver. We've got to hold them here for the Alliance forces.
Waiting nervously in the bow hold of the Nara, Kell saw that the Provocateur was almost centered in the exit from the hold. He gripped his control yoke to quell the shaking of his hands. Get ready. Get ready. Target and fire! Kell fired both torpedoes and saw them streak off toward the Provocateur. A dozen torpedoes joined them in crossing to the frigate. The stern end of the capital ship lit up in a glowing explosion. Five away! And Kell shot out of Nightcaller's bow. Wedge called, "Graze, form up!" He goosed the engines of his TIE fighter and moved out in an arc that would carry them well around the Provocateur on a course toward the Corvette Constrictor. As soon as his range meter read two clicks, he began firing lasers. Nightcaller's turret guns had already struck home, he saw. The Corvette's insulating sheaths glowed from absorbed energy. Face was in the stairwell when Nightcaller was jarred by a powerful blow and he was knocked from his feet. Lights leading to the bridge flickered, and smoke drifted through the corridor. The blast door to the bridge was bowed in toward him. Paint had peeled and burned from its surface, and the metal of the door was glowing red from heat. Face gulped and hit his comlink. "Captain Rackness, any bridge crew? Come in!" There was no answer. Wedge and Phelan roared past the Constrictor's bow, reversed, and fired almost before they looked. Energy spilled out of the Corvette's hold, evidence that the ion engines of one of the TIE fighters had been hit. The Corvette's belly turret swung after them, firing as they passed, but then the guns froze in position, their last blast half the intensity of a standard barrage. Wedge switched his comm unit to broad-spectrum Imperial frequencies.
"Constrictor, this is the New Republic. You are helpless under our guns. I'll give you 10 seconds to surrender."
It was only a moment before a strangled voice replied,
"Constrictor to rebel forces. We surrender."
Jansen's voice cut in, "Wedge, Nightcaller's in trouble." Kell tore past the Provocateur. His jittery laser fire had missed the first screen of TIE fighters, but his second set of torpedoes had detonated on the frigate's shields.
"Wraiths, form up. We're not getting through their shields alone. I want a torpedo barrage. Everyone fire on my mark except 7 and 9. You fire exactly 1 second later."
Kell gained altitude relative to the frigate and dived toward the top side, positioning his targeting brackets over the antenna ring. "Wraiths, 3, 2, 1, mark!" He watched the reddish trails of 10 proton torpedoes leap away from the X-wings and slam into the frigate's topside. The next 4 torpedoes were away before the detonation and debris cloud began to clear. He saw their trails enter the expanding ball and disappear within as the X-wings arched away. The Wraiths worked all day repairing Nightcaller and the captured Constrictor, both corvettes docked in the middle of a creeper-overgrown field on Talisea. That evening, when everything was dimmed by the haze that surrounded the planet, Wedge asked everyone to line up in Nightcaller's forward lounge for a ceremony. Admiral Akbar had come from Coruscant to help in the battle, but he had brought something with him besides.
Medals and new rank insignia for Face, Kel, and Atril Taban. Wedge formally presented each medal. Then he turned to Kel.
And finally, an award as well-deserved as these promotions. Lieutenant Tanner.
Kel came to attention again.
In attempting to save a pilot who had suffered catastrophic damage, you demonstrated both unusual courage and enviable piloting skills. Therefore, I am pleased to be able to present you with the Kalidor Crescent.
Kel endured their well-wishes and backslaps as long as he could, then escaped to his quarters. When the knock came at his door, he ignored it. The door chirped acceptance of Kel's passcode and slid open. Tyria entered and closed it behind her.
"How'd you do that?"
he asked. "I got on the comm link and asked Grindr." She sat on the edge of the bed, her expression worried. "Kel, what's wrong?"
He rocked as though in the grip of a wrestler as big as he was. Finally, he pulled the medal off his neck and threw it across the room. "This is a lie."
She looked at the medal where it lay, then turned back to him. "It's for superior flying skills and bravery. What part is a lie?"
"Both. Tyria, I'm my father's son. I'm scared to death all the time. One of these days we'll be in an engagement, and I'll lose all pretense at self-control and run off for the stars. And Jansen or Commander Antilles will shoot me down, and that'll be it. Or I'll be dragged back for court-martial, and I'll have ruined our family name, the second name in two generations. I'm going to resign my commission."
Tyria was a long time in answering. "Do you trust me, Kel?"
"Sure."
"With your life?"
"Yes, absolutely."
"Will you trust me with something bigger than your life?"
"What?"
"I want you to trust me that you are wrong and I am right." Kel looked down.
"No."
"Then you don't rank my opinion as equal to your own."
"Sure I do, but I know myself better than you do."
She shook her head.
"No, you don't, and that's the problem. You've told me that for years you've based your life on ideas that were just plain wrong.
When you were a child, you persuaded yourself that your father didn't do what he did, that Lieutenant Jansen was a cold-blooded killer. You had the courage to admit you were wrong. You also admitted that you weren't really in love with me before, that you were wrong about that, too." He didn't answer.
"I want you to have the courage to trust my opinion more than your own. And I know I'm safer with you flying with us. Please."
He sighed and closed his eyes, cutting off her loving, merciless stare.
"All right." Obinipor, the next stop on Nightcaller's circuit, was a free colony with an admirable mix of natural resources, metal suited to the fabrication of power generators, and active volcanism, providing the colonists with power of their own. Their orders were to take 2 TIE fighters and buzz the corporate headquarters. They were making their initial drop to normal space when Nightcaller received a transmission on the holonet. Admiral Triggett's hologram swam into coherence. Face half rose from his chair in the ship's auxiliary bridge.
"You! I cannot believe you have the sheer poisonous gall to contact me after that betrayal!"
Triggett held up a hand.
"Please, Captain. As soon as we realized it was a trap, we had to choose from among several tactics, none of which could please everyone. Stand by for a new transmission."
A second hologram materialized before Face. "Warlord Zinge." Face leaned back very slowly.
"My lord."
Zinge gave him a close look.
"Zurel, I understand you are upset with the Admiral, but you did a fine job of getting your ship out of danger. Now I want you to join the Admiral for one last mission. We have analyzed the data from the spy satellites you left behind. Do you know who's been following you?"
"No."
"Rogue Squadron."
Face smiled.
"Really? I take its mission involves them?"
On the other hollow, Triggett spoke up.
"We're going to destroy them, Darillion."
Face took a deep breath.
"We could do even more."
Triggett smiled.
"What do you mean?"
Between Implacable and Nightcaller, between your TIE fighters and mine, we can destroy more than just one 12-fighter squadron. If we had a bigger target, one for which the rebels would bring in additional fighters, we could destroy several squadrons.
Zinge had picked the site of the attack on the rebels. Essien, a non-aligned planet that was a major center of industrial manufacture. Packard Light Transport, owned by another Zinge alias, built repulsor-lift utility vehicles. Wedge addressed the gathered officers. Our orders from Zinge are to head with all due speed to Essien. Implacable will join us on the planet's primary moon for the ambush. Wedge smiled grimly. Then we drop the heavy end of the hammer on them. 2 days later, Nightcaller rested on the surface of Essien's largest satellite, a silvery rock covered in impact craters and dust. Floating a few hundred meters above them was the Imperial-class star destroyer Implacable. Not far away, a communications relay dish was set up atop a mountain. It was designed to relay transmissions from the planet's surface to ships beyond the moon. But Face, following the Wraith's plan, had convinced Admiral Triggett that the dish was the key to their ability to hide from Rogue Squadron and yet remain instantly responsive. What we do, Face had explained to Triggett, is rig the dish to throw off emissions strong enough to conceal the standard engine emissions from our two ships. We can be right here, ready to launch, and Rogue Squadron will be unaware of us.
At which point, we have them anyway, Triggett had agreed. A good plan.
Now, Face slouched in his chair in the comm center. Every so often, Admiral Triggett wanted to chat, and Face had to be prepared. Now the Admiral looked irritable.
Darillion, are you sure you blazed a clear enough trail for Rogue Squadron to follow?
Face nodded. They know where we are.
A simple game of follow best.
The phrase didn't ring a bell with Face. He simply nodded. The Admiral frowned.
Follow best, he repeated.
Face smiled.
I'm sorry, sir. I was wondering if my few TIE fighters might have the honor of escorting Implacable once the battle starts.
Don't change the subject, Darillion. You follow best.
Finally, word sprang up on the main monitor. Face glanced over them.
You follow best by following from in front. Thus your prey never knows that he's not actually the predator.
You're rather slow with a catchphrase that is practically a reflex among former intel officers from Coruscant. Why is it that you don't know something that should be second nature to Captain Zurel Darillion?
Because I am not Captain Darillion.
At Triggett's expression of surprise, he continued.
Not the Darillion who left home 2 years ago.
Data began spilling across his monitor as Nightcaller's bridge crew tried to keep Face ahead of Triggett's prying questions.
I'm not the Darillion I was before the Lusankia fled Coruscant, and my wife died in the disaster that followed.
You're evading the question.
Face continued as if he hadn't heard the interruption.
An irony to that, of course, that one woman I adored killed the other woman I adored.
What did you say?
Face could have cheered. He'd finally pulled Triggett off the tracks of his interrogation.
Oh, I loved my wife, Admiral. But Isine Icehard was a goddess to me.
You're joking.
Did you ever meet her?
Of course, several times.
I, too. And I was dumbstruck each time.
He shook his head ruefully.
Just the smell of her. A touch of perfume, something with spice, but lacking any sweetness whatsoever.
The Admiral nodded, fascinated.
Leatherwood. A scent few women can carry off.
That was it.
Face managed a sad smile.
And now both my loves are dead. One more reason to wipe the stain of the rebellion from the galaxy. My reason, anyway.
I understand.
Triggett's tone was solemn.
Yes, of course your TIE fighters may escort Implacable. I'll leave you to your preparations, Captain.
The communications officer announced, Cargo carrier Red Feathers is passing through Essien's outer security belt. Aethryl Taban, promoted to the rank of captain after the loss of Captain Rakness, nodded.
That's our contact. Put it up on the monitor.
A moment later, the auxiliary bridge's main monitor glowed with the image of a decrepit, ancient container ship approaching one of Essien's warehousing space stations.
Jansen stared in amazement. That's Bloodnest!
Indeed, the container ship approaching Essien was the pathetic supertransport that had served the pirates of M2398-3 as a base. Wedge shook his head. I can't believe they got it flying.
You'd better get to your fighters, Aethryl said.
Kell flipped switches. Five here. All systems nominal. He heard similar reports from the pilots around him, nestled in the metal brackets in Nightcaller's bowhold. Grinder, Runt, Fainan, Donos, and Tyria reported go conditions. Face would join them later. Wedge, Phelan, Jansen, and Piggy were readying themselves in the four TIE fighters. In the next row over, Tyria blew Kell a kiss. Lieutenant Gara Petethel looked up from her station in the crew pit. I think the old container ship is a rebel delivery mechanism, sir. It's reporting structural damage from planetary gravity. My guess is it breaks up and rains X-Wings. Triggett brought up communications with the container ship. Redfeathers, do you anticipate debris entering our atmosphere?
I'm afraid that's an affirmative, Essien. We'll do what we can to limit it. We're setting our self-destruct for 5 minutes, and we'll eject in an escape pod. But we're not exactly hauling Durasteel ingots up here. You're mostly going to get a rain of manure.
Admiral Triggett looked at his navigator.
Plot their course in relation to the Pickard Light Transport Plant, the navigator checked. Laterally, within 50 kilometers.
The admiral settled back, satisfied.
Lieutenant Petethel, award yourself a 3-day pass.
The ancient container ship called Red Feathers tumbled helplessly, its hull already deforming, as it reached the outer edges of Essien's atmosphere. An escape pod ejected and drifted away from the planet. A minute later, the first explosion rocked the cargo ship's surface. As its structure gave way, tiny rectangles, standardized cargo containers, tumbled free. With them were smaller, more irregular shapes. Wedge activated the ship's intercom.
Rogue, Green, and Blue squadrons are emerging.
Green Squadron was a unit of Y-Wing bombers from General Somm on Borlaeus. Blue Squadron was a unit of A-Wings commanded by General Crespin. Between them and the X-Wings of Rogue Squadron, this mission was being handled by a versatile set of attack craft.
Greyflight, stand by for the command from Implacable. Wraith Squadron, are you ready?
Kell's voice trembled.
Ready, sir.
The containers began to glow from friction with the atmosphere. Wedge's comm officer turned toward him.
Transmission from Implacable, sir. Launch all TIE fighters.
Wedge watched the sensors as 72 TIE fighters sped along the 500,000 clicks that separated Essien from her largest moon. The TIEs had nearly arrived at the original site of Red Feather's destruction. Wedge activated the comm system.
Face, mount up. Wraiths, prepare to execute the Lorin spitball.
He moved to the chief pilot's seat. The officer yielded it to him and moved to the secondary weapons console. Wedge asked him,
"Ready for tractor duty?"
The young man cracked his knuckles and grinned. "It'll be the biggest thing I've ever tried to tractor in." Gara Petethel spoke sharply.
"Admiral, Nightcaller is maneuvering. It looks like she's preparing to head toward Essien." "Damned glory hound! Instruct them to stay on station. Transmit a routine query about their intentions."
Aethryl heard Wedge.
"Talon, strike!"
And she inverted her TIE fighter, rolling over backwards as though she were in a dogfighting loop, but moving not 1 meter. A moment later, the Implacable was before her, above her, upside down. She brought up her targeting sensor, zoomed it in on the Implacable's bridge a click and a half away, and fired.
Kell bracketed the hull halfway between the solar ionization reactor and the stern. Fire! 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 And triggered his proton torpedoes. The Implacable's viewport blew in, raining shards of transparisteel. Shards that reversed direction and fled into space as the bridge atmosphere vented over Essien's moon. Air screamed from the bridge. Ahead, the blast door separating the bridge from the security foyer began to close. Trinket gave up all pretense at dignity and dropped flat, elbow crawling into the foyer, just ahead of the closing door. Wedge raised the bow of Nightcrawler until the ship was pointed straight upward. He triggered a switch on the console and up swung a piloting yoke.
Ready on tractors?
Ready.
3, 2, 1, 0.
He hit Nightcrawler's thrusters. The Corvette jerked and rose a few meters more above the moon's surface, then hovered, thrusters blasting, tethered to the moon by her own tractor beam. The thrust emission kicked lunar dust and stones up in a cloud all around the Corvette. Wedge lost sight of the Star Destroyer above them, but it was still on sensors, distorted but not completely screened by the distant dish emissions. Bow guns, fire at will!
Trigget shouted, "Recall all TIE squadrons!"
Trigget's officers were too well trained to protest that his order left the manufacturing facility on the planet open to the rebel assault. But the plant only mattered to Trigget in the long term, for now he had to keep Implacable in one piece, and that meant throwing as many resources at the treacherous Captain Darillion as he could. If it was Darillion, Trigget cursed.
"Weapons! Is Nightcrawler destroyed?"
"No, sir. We're suffering sensor malfunction."
"Target her visually, you idiot!"
"There's a problem, sir. We can't see her."
Kell and Runt stayed close to the Implacable's hull, making it all but impossible for any gunnery emplacement to have them in sight for more than a split second. It was tricky flying. The hull rose in steep angles like the sides of a ziggurat. The instant they cleared the final rise before the command pylon, Kell aimed and fired. His proton torpedoes hit just as Runt fired. Then the two X-Wings vectored away before they could assess the damage they'd done. Gara gave Trigget the next grim report.
"We are getting transmissions from the manufacturing plant. The Pekut TIE fighters never made it off the ground."
"What?"
"The rebels apparently had commando forces on the ground. The launch tubes were destroyed, and a squadron of rebel Y-wing bombers is blowing the whole facility to pieces."
Kell heard Runt's voice.
"5, we have incoming fighters."
Kell glanced at his sensors and froze. Red dots were approaching from the direction of Essien. Countless dots.
"Right, 6. Let's,
His back locked up in a painful knot. He tried to aim toward the incoming fighters, but his flight stick resisted him. He could not bring his X-Wing's nose around toward the attackers.
"Waiting for your turn, 5.
"I'm experiencing a control malfunction. Give me a visual check, will you?"
"We don't see anything wrong."
Kell continued to wrestle with his stick until finally it cooperated. He relaxed as he continued on his course out of the line of fire and into open starfield. His sensor monitor showed those millions of red dots closing on Implacable and Nightcrawler farther and farther behind him as he headed toward open space. Kell checked his sensor board and saw no sign that any craft was pursuing him. With his lead, he could be in hyperspace before anyone caught up to him. He was safe for now. Pursuit would come some other day. Maybe it would be Face or Fainan or Tyria. The shock of it hit him. What would it do to Tyria, knowing she had sent her lover to oblivion? It would be Kell's fault. As though he were rising to the surface after a deep dive, his mind came free of the thoughts in which it had been submerged. He looped around and put all his vehicle's discretionary energy toward acceleration.
Phelan rose toward the largest hole the Wraith's series of attacks had made in Implacable's keel. It was broad enough to accommodate her TIE fighter, even broad enough to allow the passage of Grinder's X-Wing behind her. She eased through the gap into the darkness beyond. Above would be the giant array of power cells that enabled Implacable to move. No one, so far as she knew, had ever done this. Flown into an enemy Star Destroyer and reamed it out from the inside. Carefully, she rotated so that she was pointing upwards. And she fired. Kel got laser lock on an interceptor, fired his quad-linked lasers, saw his shot carve away the upper half of a solar wing.
Who's that? Five, is that you?
Kel grinned as he responded to Face. That's right, Eight. How are you doing?
It's unpleasant as a hut's butt in here. Where were you?
It's my sister's birthday. I had to take her a present. Hold tight. Kel aimed at the thickest concentration of TIEs and dove in, firing as fast as his lasers would cycle. Gara Petethel faced Trigget.
Admiral, we're going to lose Implacable.
Trigget fixed her with a cold stare.
With the TIE fighters chewing the attackers to pieces, I don't believe it.
Something is in the power cell section, methodically destroying every cell. In 10 minutes, maybe less, we're going to lose all main power.
He brushed past her and looked at the damage report. She was right.
Do we surrender, sir?
Dizzied, he shook his head.
We've lost, but we're not going to give those rebel scum another Star Destroyer they can repair and use for their own purposes. Implacable will take as many of them with her as she can.
Sir, that will be more than 35,000 people dead.
And how many will die if the rebels turn this ship on the Empire?
He leaned in close.
But for those who are most necessary to me, there are ways to survive. Tell me, can you fly an interceptor?
Wary, she shook her head.
Pity. I have my personal interceptor standing by. It is equipped with a hyperdrive, as are its two escort interceptors. I was going to offer one of them to you. Instead, I must recommend that you take a shuttle. At least you will survive.
She looked regretful.
Thank you for thinking of me. But, sir, the rebels would try me as a traitor and execute me. I won't let them have that satisfaction. I'll stay here.
Admiral Trigget walked at a fast clip toward the cluster of interceptors remaining in the now cavernously empty TIE hangar. He spoke into his comlink.
Main computer, verify identity by voice print. Code Omega-1, prepare self-destruct.
Verify self-destruct.
Apwa Trigget, commands self-destruct.
The mechanic on duty opened the access port to Trigget's interceptor. The admiral climbed in, still talking.
5 minutes from Mark. Mark!
Lieutenant Gara Petethel, her shoulders set with anger, recorded two quick messages on her comm console, then took the next turbo lift up to the officers' quarters. She picked up a sealed package from her small room and took another lift to the admiral's chambers. The doors were unguarded. Trigget would have taken his favorite bodyguards to be his escort pilots. Gara told the doors,
Emergency override 0797 Petethel.
The doors slid open. She entered, shut them behind her, and quickly peeled out of her uniform.
How dare he? 37,000 men and women.
She pulled off her black wig, threw it atop her clothes. She tugged at the mole on her cheek. It came free. Now the container. She opened it to reveal clothes, if you could call them that. Sheer stuff made from Lovetti moth fiber that would have cost her 6 months' pay had she not stolen it. She put it on. Also in the case were data cards, her choices for a new identity. Then she spoke a variation on the code that had given her access to this chamber. A portion of one wall slid aside. Beyond was the access to Trigget's personal escape pod, the one no one but Trigget was supposed to know about. Gara Petethel's voice came across Implacable's intercom.
Attention, crew. Implacable is losing power and will crash in 5 minutes or less. Abandon ship.
All over the Star Destroyer, officers and crew looked at one another. Only the commander was authorized to issue such an order. But the chain of command could be breaking down just as the ship's systems were. Crew members began racing toward the escape pod accesses. Only the most loyal, the most foolhardy, remained behind at gunnery positions. Kell completed his third pass through the ties. There were fewer of them this time around. Much of that was Rogue Squadron's fault. He'd never seen such coordinated skill. But the odds were still bad, and he knew his luck could not continue to hold. It didn't. He heard Runt's voice.
Fire! Roll out!
He snapped up on his starboard wing, but the crossfire from two oncoming TIE interceptors struck him with casual accuracy. The first laser blast battered at his stern shields. The second burned into the fuselage behind his R2 unit. His flight stick locked up and his control board went dead. All electronics gone. He began a slow, graceful plunge toward the moon below. Kell opened the panel to his left and hit the button for a cold start. Nothing happened. He counted the seconds as the ground came closer and felt a heaviness settle on his chest. He turned to look through his aft viewport at his astromech. I'm going to go now, 13. Thanks for everything. Then Kell faced forward and yanked the handle for his ejection seat. The explosive bolts in his canopy blew and his ejection seat fired off. He was launched up and away, momentarily defying the moon's weak gravity. His X-wing hit the far lip of an impact crater and instantly became flattened garbage and flying shrapnel. Coldness gripped him as his body heat fled his inadequately insulated pilot suit. But for the moments while he still rose on that rocket thrust, he had an incredible vista of the flaring lasers and bright explosions of the battle before him, of the battle-scarred Star Destroyer beyond. Wedge's sensor officer said, Implacable is falling, sir.
Sithspit, tell Wraiths 3 and 4 to get out of there.
Wedge pulled back on the control yoke, leaning Nightcrawler over at a steep backwards angle that, if it continued, would result in the Corvette's crash.
Cut the tractor, now!
Nightcrawler lurched upward, accelerating smoothly but slowly at an angle that would carry it out from under the Star Destroyer.
Drop all shields, put everything into thruster power.
The Corvette's rate of speed increased. So did Implacable's rate of descent. Grinder's last proton torpedo vaporized more mass of the Star Destroyer's increasingly widening power center. The illumination from that blast showed Phelan something.
She's dropping!
Phelan inverted her TIE fighter, goosed the thrusters. But before she could dive, something hit her from the rear. She swore. Her starboard solar wing array was hung up on something.
Grinder! Get out of here!
Not without you!
You moron! If you don't get clear of the way out, I can't get out! Go!
She watched as dozens of meters below, the silhouette of Grinder's X-wing pushed out. She waited until she was lined up with the hole in the keel. Then she brought her engine thrust up to full power. She swung to starboard, hit a bulkhead hard, and swung back again. This time, her front viewport was starred with cracks. As Grinder shot through the hole, his starboard laser clipped a piece of wreckage. His X-wing tumbled as it exited. The instant he was back in control, one of Implacable's turbo laser blasts washed across him, engulfing him cleanly. When the beam faded, Grinder was gone. As Implacable descended, throwing off escape pods by the score, she broadcast one last message. The voice was female, but as distorted as if it had come through a New Republic fighter comm system.
Attention, New Republic forces. The pilots of the three interceptors who launched 1 minute ago included Admiral Triggett. If you want him, that's where you'll find him.
The Star Destroyer fell at what looked like a leisurely pace, an illusion fostered by its great size and by the moon's 0.4 gravity. The Wraiths, not actively engaged in combat, kept their desperate attention on the gap in the hull, waiting for one last TIE fighter to emerge. It didn't. Implacable hit stern first, its great mass causing the stern to shatter and deform as it settled. Whole bulkheads and sections of keel blew out the sides and top as the ship's atmosphere compressed. Wedge's throat was tight. Grinder, Phelan, dead within seconds of each other. He directed a transmission to that which remained of the Implacable's crew, those who had fled in escape pods. Attention, forces of the Implacable. This is Commander Wedge Antilles of New Republic Starfighter Command. I recommend you break off hostilities now. He got an answer instantly.
Antilles, are you demanding surrender?
Negative. Here's the deal. You break off hostilities, we do too. Go wherever you care to. We've won this round. Neither one of us gains from continuing this battle. Then, a new voice, words spoken with biting precision.
Captain, accept the commander's offer.
The captain's voice returned.
You're only an observer here. You don't issue orders to... Sithspit! He's faked his own man!
The precise voice returned.
I apologize. A slight question of chain of command. Commander, you have a deal.
Wedge's weapons officer stared wide-eyed. You look like you knew him.
You might say that. That was Baron Suntir Fell.
The officer paled. Baron Fell, since the death of Darth Vader, was accounted the best Imperial pilot living. What was he doing as an observer on Admiral Trigget's ship? As Kell was drawn in through Nara's emergency airlock, he shivered uncontrollably. Fenan was lying on one of the passenger couches, a blanket over him, his face pallid, but he managed a faint smile for Kell. Atril put a blanket around Kell's shoulders.
They lost Grinder and Phelan.
Kell sat beside her.
Tyria? She's not hurt.
Kell relaxed. He felt relief about Tyria, sadness for the loss of Phelan and Grinder, and an odd sort of jubilation at the loss of a part of himself. He knew that something in him had died as well. He did not miss it.
Leader to Wraith-9.
Donos sat stiffly, his whole body cold, his hand holding the control stick in a death grip.
Leader to Wraith-9.
Nine, here.
Report your condition.
I'm functional.
Donos checked his fuel reading. He had several more minutes worth of dogfighting power available to him.
I'm in pursuit of three enemies who are not part of the pacified force.
If they surrender, you're obliged to accept it.
If.
Donos gained on the interceptors, the personal vehicles of an Imperial Admiral and his favorite bodyguards. A few more minutes, and they'd be far enough from Essien's gravity well to enter hyperspace. When the sensor screen showed three clicks distance between the X-Wing and the Interceptors, Donus's comm board lit up with a cross-frequency transmission.
Interceptors, this is Wraith Squadron. I'm giving you this opportunity to surrender.
The reply came in a dry voice.
I notice a certain disparity in our numbers, though. Perhaps you'd better go home.
Then he saw the interceptor group change formation. One interceptor moved in the way of his lasers. The other was going back to destroy the X-Wing, or die trying. Tonos began rocking in his seat as though the action would coax just a little more acceleration out of the X-Wing. In moments, the interceptors would be able to jump to hyperspace. Donos rotated. He would close until he had barely enough time to maneuver out of the head-to-head death trap, then fire his concussion missiles. That would eliminate the suicide pilot and give him a clear shot at the other two interceptors. Trigget was in front, his bodyguard trailing behind. As soon as they sensed a laser lock, Trigget would have to go to starboard, because that would keep his bodyguard right behind him and in the path of Donos' lasers. Donos almost smiled. He switched to proton torpedoes and aimed visually toward empty space to the interceptor's starboard. When the interceptor and X-Wing were a quarter click apart, Donos angled away, but twin streaks of light continued down his original course. The interceptor he was jousting with reached the point they'd both been aiming for and exploded, victim of twin concussion missiles and bad tactics. Donos stopped his X-Wing's rotation and had his guns directed at the other two vehicles in a mere second. Immediately, as Donos's laser lock found them, Trigget's interceptor and its pursuit vehicle broke away to starboard. Donos fired. One for Thalen and Grinder. Two for Talon. Donos's lasers found the pursuit interceptor, stitched them with red fire. His first shot hit the interceptor where the forward viewport met the hull. The interceptor detonated in a brilliant flash. His second shot entered the cloud, but did not emerge from it. Talon's squad had had its revenge. Now, perhaps, 11 good pilots, one ever-helpful R2 unit, and a Tatooine woman who'd never recognized her own worth would be able to rest easy. Her beaches and seas are almost as beautiful as those on Storinol, Kel reflected. The world was Borlaeus, once the site of the biomedical research facility of an Imperial general, later captured by the New Republic. Borlaeus was now home to a fighter training base. Kel lounged on a puff cot large enough to accommodate his generous frame, with plenty of room for Tyria beside him. Up and down the beach, other wraiths and crew members of Nightcrawler splashed in the waves, lounged on puff cots, sat drinking around tables under broad reflective parasols. The wraiths, Kel's fellow pilots, his friends. There were no recriminations in their eyes. Most of them knew that he'd had some sort of attack back on Essien's moon. They also knew that he'd recovered from it, thrown himself into the worst part of the fight. So, like Donos's collapse, it wasn't spoken of. He glanced down at Tyria, a teasing remark on his lips, but she was asleep, her head on his shoulder. A shadow fell across them. Admiral Ackbar stood above him. Kel saluted. Sir,
don't get up.
The Admiral moved to sit on the next puff cart over.
I am sorry I was not able to speak to you on Talisia.
I was avoiding you, sir. Ackbar turned one eye toward him.
Why?
I was ashamed, sir. Kel realized that he wouldn't have been able to say it a week ago.
For not being able to save Jasmine?
Yes, sir.
I came to thank you. When I read what you tried to do for her, well, it is cruel to learn one you love has died so far away from the heart of her clan. But at least I knew she was in the midst of friends, friends close enough to try such a thing.
She was, sir. Ackbar took a long look at the water, then rose.
Enjoy your leave, Lieutenant. Come back strong and invigorated. Warlord Zinge is still out there.
At the top of the hill, Wedge waited in his skimmer. The Admiral climbed awkwardly in.
You're still fully dressed, Commander. Shouldn't you be enjoying the weather and the water as they are?
Wedge set the skimmer in motion, wheeling it around toward the flat field where the X-Wings and shuttles waited. I'm not really as close to the wraiths as I am to the rogues, sir. I think I'd make them uncomfortable.
So, you're not one of the lads. More like a real officer? As intimidating as a general?
Wedge glanced at him.
Oh, yes, I bet. Actually, I was rather hoping you'd take this opportunity to acknowledge that the wraiths had proven their worth, as you put it.
Your 3 months aren't up, General. You are still in danger.
Wedge smiled. Admiral, that's the story of my life.
This is Anthony Heald. We hope you have enjoyed this production of Star Wars Wraith Squadron, Book 5 of the X-Wing series by Aaron Alston. This program was produced by David Rapkin and directed by Lars Howell. Abridgment by Trevi Johnson. Wraith Squadron is a production of Lucasfilm Limited, copyright 1998, all rights reserved. The book Wraith Squadron is available wherever Bantam books are sold.